listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
All right, welcome on in. It is the Forza Podcast. I am your host, Marsh Thomas. As with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how are we?
I'm doing good, Marsh. How about you, man?
Pretty good, and we're about to be better because we got a big guest tonight.
I'm so pumped, man. I'm so freaking pumped.
Bring him on.
All right, let's do it. Hello?
Hey, hello.
Brad, how are we?
How's it going?
Brad, how you doing, man? This is Jordan.
How's it going, Jordan? I'm doing good. I'm just a little tired. Just drove through LA traffic.
Hey.
It's a war zone.
I know. Hey, we know how it is. We're West Coast guys. Yeah. We are introducing our newest guest, our one of our favorite Hurricanes of all time, the leading passer in the history of the University of Miami, second in all time touchdown passes. He was your quarterback from 2014 to 2016. It is Mr. Brad Kaya. Brad, thank you for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me on.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, so Brad, we had a quick question, just getting right into it. I mean, you're an LA guy. Mm-hmm. What was it like yesterday with the devastating news about Kobe?
Oh, you guys are really hitting the nail on the head, just dead straight into
it. Yeah, sorry about that, man.
Oh no, it's all good. No, it's been an eerie, couple of days. Even that morning I woke up and something didn't feel right, and I went out to just work out at the gym, and everyone, it was just a really eerie feeling. And a lot of silence. And even today, driving into work, it felt like no one was on the street. Sitting, at work, that everyone was just kind of quiet and still talking about it. But yeah, it's just a weird feeling. And it feels like a president died today. Like, it feels like it's that monumental. It's that, yeah, that much of an impact. And just my heart goes out to all the families. I mean, there were other families involved as well. So my heart goes out to all of them involved.
So did you, is it safe to say, Brad, you grew up in LA, were you a pretty big Laker fan?
Yeah, all the way. I mean, you didn't really, if you grew up in LA and you're a Clippers fan or you're an Angels fan, what are you doing?
No, right.
But yeah, definitely.
So I gotta like call you out on something. Are you really not an In-N-Out fan, huh?
I used to be when I weighed 230 pounds. When I was 225, going into Miami and had to lose weight when I got there my freshman year. Yeah, I loved In-N-Out. I used to get the protein style double patty and the animal fries after every single game, after every single every Friday night. Victory, of course, I'd always get it with my high school girlfriend.
Dude, here in Utah, In-N-Out is like absolute king, and I always tell these Miami people, like, they always talk trash on it, man, but it's elite. But let's get into it, because me and Jordan are West Coast guys. I'm originally from Miami, but I'm West Coast, and you're from California. What kind of, going back to your recruiting process, what kind of convinced you to go to Miami? Because when you committed, it's not like the program was necessarily thriving.
Yeah. Well, they were my first offer. I think James Coley offered me a scholarship over Facebook when his Facebook profile picture was still his Florida State picture. So they were my first offer, and I kind of took offense to, USC and UCLA recruiting, out-of-state guys. When I was 10 minutes down the road. But that's beside the point. It's just, I wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to blaze my own trail. And I feel like, when you're from California, or you're from Utah, or you're from Oregon or Washington, you go to there's six schools that kids hope to go to on this side of the country. We all know them, of course, but I just want to do something different, blaze my own trail. And yeah, Miami wasn't, at the top of the line school. We didn't have the top of the line facilities. We had just gotten a turf field outside. When I visited, the football team was still practicing on the intramural field. But I just believed in the school. I thought it was a special place, and you feel that when you step on campus. And I just wanted to, bring the U back and resurrect something that had been dormant.
Awesome. So I remember back, I've always been pretty active on the message boards, you know, like the fan boards and stuff.
Nice.
I remember late in your
recruitment. I avoid all those. I always avoided all of those.
As you should, man. This gets pretty toxic there.
Yeah. Now I love looking at all the fan stuff. It's like a part time now when you're a Miami fan. It's like Twitter is half, you know, the battle right there. So
yeah, right.
Dude, it's like a daily war.
Yeah, exactly. So there's Democrats and Republicans within our own, you know, their own version of Miami, you know.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
Yeah.
So late in your recruitment, there was everyone was convinced that you were going to Boise. And yeah, I can't remember if you actually visited Boise or not.
But I did.
Okay, so what was that like? Did you actually consider them, or were you all Miami, or what went on late in your recruitment between, you know, you and Boise, I guess?
No, I mean, I never really considered them. I'd met the coach before. I hadn't really visited any other place. I hadn't even gotten to take an official visit. And there were some talk of like Al Golden getting fired and stuff, you know, whatnot. Yeah. But I just wanted to visit someplace, and, you know, I hadn't seen snow probably in about, I want to say 12 years. So yeah, I just want to see something different. I mean, I didn't really get to see rural places, at all through my life. I mean, I finally in Michigan, but I barely saw them. So yeah, I just wanted to see something different, but I never really actually considered picking Boise State University over, the University of Miami. So.
Good to hear, man. Miami guy through and through. I love it.
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah, Boise is not that great.
Yeah.
You know, Brad, one of the, you know, when I look back at your Miami career, one of the things that sticks out the most is your battles with Florida State. You know, I remember I was driving through a blizzard during the 2014 game and listening to that classic, and I was actually living in Tallahassee during the 2015 one. And, you know, talk about those. I mean, obviously they didn't, you know, come out in Miami's favor, but kind of talk about those games, because, I mean, there were so many memorable players and,
right,
and play. What did that game mean to you?
No, I mean, it meant, you know, that was the one that we had circled every year, and that, you know, kind of is what our season would hang on year after year. It was too bad I had to go against some of their best players, I think, of all time, which sucked. I mean, there was times I wish I was athletic enough to, you know, run down and kick off, or, you know, go out there and try and tackle Dalvin Cook, but, it's unfortunate. We came close a few times, but I'm glad that, I think it's been 3 years in a row now, right, that we've whooped on them, right?
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's good, you know, no matter what the teams are ranked, no matter how good the talent is on each side, it's still a competitive game. It's still a game to look forward to. And no matter what the record is, it's like that's what the season hangs on. You can go 1-11, but it's like you beat Florida State and you're glorified forever. So, yeah.
And you know, when I talked to you, what was it, like last semester or last September or something, when we did that interview for State of the U, I asked you if you could have one game back or one throwback. I think you said 2014 against the Seminoles. Is that right?
14, yeah, that was the one. That yeah, definitely 2014.
So why do you say that?
Just because I feel like it would have changed a lot of things. I mean, you know, we almost had a chance to go up by like 3 scores at the end of the half. And they had a few fluke plays happen, and there was a couple of throws in the second half that, you know, I probably could have hit that would have been huge. Just overall, there was, you know, probably 3 or 4 plays that we all wish we could have had back. But that could have changed some things. I mean, I think we were on a win streak. You know, we win that game, then we go up to Virginia, beat them, go, you know, beat Pitt, beat the teams that came after. I feel like we could have finished, you know, 9-3. And I think Georgia Tech was the team that year that ended up winning our side of the Coastal. But we could have made things interesting, and we could have gotten to a better bowl game. We could have had a chance to finish, who knows, 10-3 or 9-3, 9-4, as opposed to, okay, we lost to Florida State. You know, everyone gave their all. Everyone got beat up in that game. Half the team got injured because you're laying your heart on the line. You know, everyone's beat up. Then we got to go play Virginia, and it's their senior night, and it's their whiteout or their blackout. Then we got to play whoever, you know, Joe Schmo next, and it's like it's hard on your momentum, on your inspiration, after losing that game late in the season when you had it going. And then to have to go and play in Shreveport, which, I mean, you saw our what Shreveport looked like this past December. It's a tough place to play when you, you know, when you're going against a underdog. So, yeah.
Yeah, that, man, I think about that game a lot too, because, you know, it was from a fan's perspective, mm-hmm. you could really see the team humming before that game, you know, like it right. seemed, I mean, you were a true freshman, but it really seemed like everyone was clicking on the same page. And I mean, Florida State seemed like the best team in the country at the time.
Right.
And, you know, you're going blow for blow with Jameis. And
yeah,
just, I don't know, I just kind of felt like everything unraveled in it. Yeah. You know, it was just.
And then it had a recruiting, and then that kind of snowballs into the next season. And,
yeah.
You know, yada, yada, yada. But it's,
yeah.
No, it's all 2020 in hindsight.
Yeah. Well, so I guess next question. I know you only spent 1 year with Manny Diaz on the coaching staff.
Yeah.
But I've noticed, especially, you know, like this offseason, Manny is getting a lot of heat.
Coach, that's what happens. You got to go 13-0, or else you got to win the Coastal at least, you know.
Right. Right, but I've noticed that the players and the recruits are still 100% Manny's corner. Like, mm-hmm. people love this dude and his players, and I just want to get your insight on that. Like, did you spend enough time around him to understand why that is?
Yeah, I spent time around him. I think what he does well is he's just genuine with his players, and he tells it like it is. He's a straight shooter, and he doesn't BS you, which in college football and, you know, in quotations, amateur college sports, there is a lot of BS, and there's a lot of coaches who sugarcoat things and beat around the bush and, you know, circumvent kids' questions when they want answers. And I think Manny doesn't really do a lot of that. And he was like that when he first got in. I'm sure he's still the same way. And yeah, guys like that, especially guys from Florida, guys from Georgia, you know, guys from Texas. It attracts kids who want to play for a coach who's a stand-up guy, a straight-up person. And, you know, sometimes he might not tell you what you want to hear, but at the end of the day, I'm sure that's what we all want. You know, that's what any good player, any good athlete in any sport wants to know, you know, how they can get better, you know, or what they need to do next. So, yeah.
And Brad, you know, when we were talking in the fall prior to the season, you know, you and I were both kind of really hyped on this season and kind of had a really good feeling. And, you know, that Manny carried this old Kane mentality. And then as the season went on and, you know, the wheel started to fall off, I remember, you know, we would talk occasionally and kind of just ask, you know, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
What were your thoughts as the season went on and just kind of watching, you know, along with us fans and just seeing, you know, the season end out the way that it did?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was a mixed bag, of course. It was hard to tell at times because I feel like every game I watched, they lost. And every game I did not watch, it was a blowout. So it's hard to tell. I feel like I saw a lot of the negative stuff. So it's hard to tell. I mean, at times it looked like there were, you know, certain guys making mental errors, and there was at times it felt like what I was watching. It felt like at times, you know, the team was, or at least on the offensive side of the ball, it felt like they were on autopilot. You know, cause you read things about them having good practices and looking good against the scout team, you know, that's one thing, but I feel like at times if you're a player, whether you're a quarterback, a lineman, a running back, receiver, I feel like you can get into bad habits by, you know, going against the scout team and going on autopilot, and then come game time. I think I saw Jaren throw one play where he did a play action. It was like a play action four burst that they do where they pull the guard. It's like a guard action, you know, play action play. And Jaren threw it like, I think it was FIU, and he threw it right at the linebacker. And like a few plays before that, he had a play action, you know, a post with an out concept, and he threw it right at the free safety. And I'm thinking, okay, I feel like they're on autopilot because the receivers weren't going for the ball. It just felt like everyone was out there coasting. So I think it starts in practice, and it seems like Lashley is his name, right?
Yeah.
It seems like he's got some, you know, some good stuff, some good pointers. I mean, seems like they're on the right track.
He's the savior.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm hoping for different results is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, this past year, it was, I mean, I've been a Canes fan my entire life. This was one of the more frustrating years. But let me, let's shift to a more positive note. You roomed with Braxton Berrios, correct?
Yep. And he's actually staying at my condo in Miami right now.
Really?
Yeah.
So anyone who knows me, me and my family were huge Braxton Berrios fans. You know, him and I actually, we have the same birthday. He's my boy. And
oh, nice.
What is your
October babies, right?
October 6th, baby.
I know my
What is your favorite Braxton story, either on the field or off the field?
I mean, I'm not gonna expose them or anything, you know.
It's a good thing.
I'd say when I lived with Braxton, he would get home at every night. He'd get home at like 1:30 every single night, literally, like, or maybe every other night. He was always getting home at 1 a.m. 1:30, and I'd hear the door close, and like, you know, I'm a hypochondriac. Virgo, I'm always uptight. So I'm thinking, oh shit, someone's breaking in. I think Braxton, he's like, oh, I just got back from the library. So it happened like a few more times. I'm like, all right, bro, like, there's no way you're at the library until 1:30, you know, 1 a.m. at night. There's no way.
Rolls house.
And then he got named, like, whatever, in every honor society, and he had a 4.0 every single semester. And I was like, oh, okay, now I see. He wasn't actually at the library, but he was at the library, you know, every night. So that's a good story, a positive story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So again, to shift gears a little on you, you know, in Marsh's interview with you a few months ago, you kind of explained why you decided to leave school and pursue your NFL career early and how that ended up with you now in the film industry, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So would you mind explaining to us all what you're up to now, like how the film industry is treating you, you know, kind of how life is?
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's very low. It's not as high stress. I mean, it's high stress in its own ways, you know, but I'm not a exec or anything yet. But no, I'm working at MGM Studios, and I'm within one of their subsidiaries, which is Orion Pictures. It just got rebooted in 2017. You know, notable Orion movies would be RoboCop, Silence of the Lambs, Dances with Wolves, but they just got rebooted. They're very based in horror movies and apocalyptic movies and stuff that I like. But I'm working as a development assistant. So development that is essentially getting a script from the script to pre-production. So we're like the gatekeepers of Hollywood. So I read a lot of scripts every day, probably read 3 or 4 a day, and give notes on them, give coverage on them, you know, recommend them to our executive, or I'll just, I pass on a lot of them because you never know what you get.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's cool to have a hand in development and see the development process and see how you get, you know, a screenplay, a script, or a simple pitch, an idea onto the big screen, and just being around the office. And because right now we're Gretel and Hansel, which I hope everyone goes to see, is coming out next week. That's our big film of January. And it's just cool to see the whole, you know, process take place from the start to finish. So, yeah.
So are you in LA full time now?
Yeah. I'm in LA full. I mean, I still have my condo in Miami, which I rent out and I can go stay at and stuff. But yeah, I'm out here full time. But I love going to, I go to Miami as much as I can. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
me too. Yeah, so Miami, Fort Lauderdale, I'm all over there.
Yeah. I love the way that you talked about your decision to declare for the NFL draft after your junior season. Mm-hmm. One of the things that stuck out is kind of, you just seemed really, really confident in that decision. Can you kind of just explain that process again? Because it really, really stuck out to me, you know, because it kind of just seemed like you knew what you were doing and you don't regret it.
Right. Yeah, I don't regret anything about it. And, you know, as a college athlete, you kind of get shuttled along and you're handheld, you know, throughout your whole process. And it's almost like you're going through it autonomously, just going, okay, class, breakfast, lunch, practice, class. And I really had to step out of things and just think about my future, what I wanted, you know, my needs and wants that were being catered to me at the university. And I just thought it was in my best interest, honestly. I didn't, you know, even though the team did great, I love how they played. I love that Malik played well, my best friends. And I was glad that he got to start when I left. But I just didn't have a good feeling in my gut, and I prayed about it. I thought about it, thought of all the benefits. You know, Miami lets you finish at any time you want to finish. You can get a free degree. So it's whether if you want to leave or not, that should never factor into it. And I was also thinking about my academic needs, because as a student athlete, you don't get the same educational experience that the normal kids get. You know, even though, you know, you're a student, you still have to miss class, to travel, you have to watch film. I was a person who watched a lot of film in class because I had a lot of things to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm not a guy that scrambles around and makes up plays and forgets plays. So I had to really hone in on what the defense was doing, because I'm not a Lamar Jackson. But yeah, it was, you know, just the educational experience is different when you can come back. And I always wanted to be a motion pictures major, but being a motion pictures major, you have to watch films at night. Like, you have to watch actual movies like every other day. You have to make films. You have to write scripts. You know, one of my last assignments was like writing a 65-page, you know, hour-long TV show script that I had to do in a matter of a few weeks. And I'm thinking, like, there's no way I could do this if I had a, you know, a bowl game to prepare for. You know, there's no way I could actually get an A in this class if I had to, you know, go to practice every single day. So yeah, it changes your educational experience, and I was able to get the degree I wanted by being able to come back and also being able to do classes online as well. So yeah, it's a lot of things factored in, but I knew, you know, I knew I was thinking several steps ahead. I mean, I always had a contingency plan. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that part. I mean, it probably doesn't, like, I don't know if it means anything to you, but like from the fans' perspective, you know, I was a big fan of yours, and I was just like, man, why, you know, like,
the fans want, you know, want you to get a contract extension and play in college for 15 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, leave when you're 30.
Yeah.
So I still get tweets every time. See, I know when quarterbacks at Miami play good or bad because I get the tweets. If they play good, I'll get a tweet saying, thank God Kai is out of here, man. This guy's whatever. This is who we've needed all along. Then when someone's throwing interceptions, I'll get a, wow, Kai should have stayed. He could be falling out right now. And I'm like, hey, my eligibility would have been up, you know, for 2 years now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny. It's all fun, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, hearing that story, and like you said, you were, you know, three steps ahead of the curve the whole time, like,
right,
that's cool, man. I don't know how anyone can't hear that and just like be happy for you that it worked out the way it did, and that you're where you want to be.
Thank you. I mean I'm happy, and you know, I'm not as stressed as I was playing football, but there's different stresses. But you know, it's nice to have, to be able to, when things don't work out, you know, the minute my spine got jacked up in the league, I was able to quickly flip the switch and transition. And I always tell guys, always don't just say it's a backup plan, but have two passions. You know, that's the biggest thing. Cause
yeah,
you know, growing up, we're all taught there's one football or nothing else. Especially at Miami, you know, it gets thrown in your face, but I always tell guys they got to find something that can just get their mind off football for an hour, for 30 minutes. That can really help you when your body gives out, because football isn't the most sustainable sport ever. I learned that in college, okay, and I learned that in my second year in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so I have a film-related question for you.
Okay.
Give us your three favorite films of all time.
That's really hard because I've got so many favorite films. I usually just go by decades, but I'll go all time for you guys.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Apocalypse Now. That's like number one. Inglourious Basterds.
Classic.
Okay. And I might just go just the whole Mad Max series, like the new Mad Max and the Mel Gibson Mad Max. Cool. And then maybe like an outside looking in is like a Blade Runner.
Okay.
Yeah. Both Blade Runners.
When I got to ask you this, man, I got two more questions for you before we let you. First thing, I mean, when are you going to come out to the Sundance Festival, bro?
my bosses, they were all out there this weekend. I was like, maybe I should just get a flight and go. I'm hoping, you know, next year. It's hard to go, you know, last minute. I'm sure everything it's probably a madhouse out there. But I'm hoping to make it out. I mean, it's like the Mecca. That's like, you know, you're making your Mecca trip, but for filmmaking. So yeah, one day I'm hoping next year.
Yeah, do it, man. Yeah.
I'll my parka or my, you know, my coat or
Yeah, I'm only about like 20 minutes from there. It's and right. My friends went and last week and they saw Will Ferrell.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. Nice. And then last question, back to the California thing. What's your favorite beach in California?
Ooh, I haven't lived in California since I was like 18, so 17. You know, like so I the beaches have probably changed now. I'd probably say it's a tie between, I mean, like Santa Monica, that's just like the go-to, like that's a consistent, you know. It's
too busy.
Safety net. It's busy, but it's just like it's consistent. There's food. There's a nice beach. You know, whatever. You can go out there. But I'd say at least in high school, it was Zuma Beach, because like we, you know, I lived in the valley. I was more inland. But Zuma had all the like beach school girls that were just tanned and they played beach volleyball all day, every day. And it's just a nice sight to look at. I mean, I didn't have to talk to him. It was just some nice to look at while I'm, you know, getting tan. I'm the Panama Valley person, you know, so it was nice.
And yeah, I mean, something that's weird about Utah, everyone in Utah always goes to Newport and Laguna. So those are,
that makes sense.
Those are my two favorite beaches.
My favorite Utah places. I don't know why. It just seems,
you know, like, yeah. And it makes sense. I don't know why, but Brad, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad we were able to do this and, you know, keep in touch. And thanks for being, you know, just a good guy and a good hurricane.
Always. So.
Yeah, thanks, Brad. It was nice to meet you and thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, man. Go Canes.
Yes, sir.
Go Canes.
Go.
All right, Marsh. That was awesome, man.
Yeah. He's, you know what? He's just, he's my guy, man. He's my guy. Like, how can you not like just? I could talk to that guy for hours. I mean,
yeah.
You know what the thing that sticks out the most is that it's just not like it's not all football with him.
Yeah. No, I mean clearly from, you know, from your interview and then he reiterated it on this, like it kind of blows my mind to think about that, you know, because I was such a big fan of his while he was playing here and, you know, but that's cool. Like I couldn't be more happy for him and like. Sounds like he's doing something he loves, and I don't care what that is. It's just cool, you know. Like you said, he's a multi-dimensional person that makes him interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I respect him so much for just telling him, you know, telling it how it is. Like,
yeah,
you need something besides football, especially at a place like Miami where it's all football, and the fact that he was able to, I mean, he went to the NFL. I mean, he was there and it just sounds like I didn't know he was at MGM Studios. That's awesome. And
yeah, so cool.
Yeah. He's definitely, you know, one of the, obviously, you know, statistical wise, one of the greats at Miami, but you know, personality wise, he's just a good guy. And so, yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Brad.
Yeah. Yeah. That was cool. You know, I've been pumped about that all week. Cause, like I said, he's one of my favorite Canes, and you know, it was cool to get to talk to him and, you know, converse a little bit. So next on the docket, we're slated to talk about Jaron. Oh. Jaron transferred this week, or I guess he entered himself into the transfer portal.
Yeah, what a What a turn of a change of topics. You know, we go from Brad and everything's, you know, he's such a positive guy and everything. And then I mean, we all saw Jaren leaving it. We all saw it coming.
I warned you guys. I filmed last week's podcast from his apartment moving out.
Yeah. And you know what? I wish him the very best of luck, because I have said this from the beginning. I think out of Jaren, Nicosi, and Tate, I think Jaren has the highest ceiling. I think I could see Jaren succeeding in the NFL more than the other guys. You know, he throws such a pretty pass. And, you know, we saw what he could do against Florida State, against Louisville, against Florida. You know, he's a good quarterback. I hope he finds a culture that fits him and, you know, is able to develop that talent, because it you know, we were talking about this earlier. It, you know, think about Jaren, what you want. You know, everyone has their opinions, but you gotta just kind of feel bad for the kid and what his experience here was like. I mean, obviously, you know, he put some things upon himself with some of his choices, but that it just sucks that he came to Miami and, you know, decommitted from Kentucky, came to Miami, had that freshman year where, you know, he was told he wasn't going to play and he gained all that weight. And then it was first reported that he was going to transfer, and then he's not transferring. And then he's the starter and he's doing good. And then the Virginia Tech game comes and all hell breaks loose. And then it was just such an up and down thing, man. You don't like anyone to go through that. But, you know, I wish Jaren the best, and it is what it is, man. It's the portal. It's college football in 2020.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been a pretty vocal critic, but you know, now that he's like actually leaving, I'm just going to put it behind me and whatever. Like you said, I genuinely wish best of luck. He's super talented. I'm with you. I think if he made it in the NFL, I wouldn't be shocked. He just needs to find a better culture fit. You know, this was the right business decision for both parties, the program and him, you know, his future. And, you know, all jokes aside, like, good luck, Jaren, you know?
Yeah.
Super talented guy.
Yeah. He, you know what? He beat FSU. I'm grateful for that, man. He holds the single game record for touchdowns in a game. Like, how crazy is that?
Yeah, it's going to be weird, dude. That's going to be a weird one to explain to my kids, you know? Like, who's Jaren Williams?
Boy.
Got some stories for you, child.
And, yeah, and, you know, I haven't looked into – I mean, there's obviously several reports on how the situation is being handled. You know what? I don't really want to get into it. It's done.
Yeah.
It's over. We have – you know, we got – Garrett King, we got Martell, we got Cozy, we got Van Dyke. Let's roll with these guys. If anyone else leaves, so be it. You know what? And this is no disrespect to Jaren at all. This is no disrespect to any other player who's left. Since that day, I don't know about you, but I felt kind of like a weight off the program's shoulders. Like, you know, we can. There's room to move forward now. I don't know. Do you feel that?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we say this every year, but the future seems bright, you know? That's classic Miami talking point, right? But yeah, I mean, just having King and you know, not having the weight of just last year and the year before, you know? I mean, like you said, kind of the choices that were made just kind of put a damper on everything in my opinion, and it just never really felt like it was going to get better, because I never really got the vibe that our starting quarterback was like all in on winning football games here at Miami. And you know, it's nice to just be past that and hope for a brighter future, you know.
It was a bumpy 2019, it was a bumpy 2018, and you know, there's a few players that have gone, you know, whether they're gone to the draft, whether they're declaring early, whether they're going to the portal. I feel like you know, people who know me on Twitter and people who have been reading my articles for a while know that I don't get too high. I don't get too low. I'm a very realistic thinker about the Canes. I'm feeling, and I don't want to sound like that off-season idiot, but like I just the more and more the days go on after all these players transfer and, you know, we got King and just reading about King and what kind of what a leader he is in the locker room and on the practice field. I have a good feeling about 2020, and it really sucks that we're still 222 days away.
Yeah.
I'll be the off-season idiot, Marsh. We're going to win 11 games. I'm saying it right now. We're winning 11 games. I don't care.
11.
Save the clip.
The thing is, you know what's crazy? You know what's crazy? We should win 11 games.
We absolutely should.
Dude, and we were talking about this earlier. So for those listening, I was doing some research today for an article, and I was on this website. I can't remember the website, but they were doing a mock draft for the 2021 NFL draft. And they had Gregory Rousseau going at number 9 in the first round. They had Brevin Jordan going 15th. They had Quincy Roche going like 20th or something. And then you add in guys like, you know, what about, you know, De'Aaron King? I mean, he could be – he could throw for 40 touchdowns and end up being a first-round pick. I mean, we have
– I think Cam Harris is going to the NFL too. You know, we got talent.
And our schedule – and I was looking at it again today. I was looking at it, and I was like, wait a second. Why should we lose more than 2 games? And I get myself into this every year, and I'm so up and down, and I'm 8-4, 9-3. I'm sticking with one of those two, but
no, you're smart. You're smart for sticking with 8-3.
I'm smart because I've seen what I've seen.
Yep. No, I have a group of friends that we, you know, we have like a group chat and we always talk sports. Like it's always going off. And seriously, every year they're like, bro, how does Miami look this year? I'm like, man, we're loaded with talent. We got an easy schedule. The coastal is wide open. I'm not saying it, but I'm just saying, you know. And at this point, dude, they're just like, bro, you say that every year.
We're the off-season champs, man. Like,
yeah.
This is what Miami is known for, like the past 10, 15 years. And it's just so. It's such a love-hate thing, man. But the last week, I will say, I've been feeling really, really positive about this program and the way that it feels. I heard that, you know, the Canes had a huge recruiting weekend this past weekend with Junior Day and a lot of kids from South Florida, a lot of Palmetto kids, Dade County kids, and, you know, a lot of positive vibes and positive notes are coming out of it from what I'm hearing. And you want to think that this year or this offseason is different from last offseason. And I wrote an article last week saying how it was because, I mean, there's several reasons. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, there was so much hype about Tate Martell. And I'm like, yeah, but Tate Martell didn't score 50 total touchdowns. And Manny Diaz wasn't – I mean, he's not tweeting – for every single small thing that happens. He's not an idiot on social media anymore. He's learned his lesson. He's been humbled. There just seems to be a focus that this team has and a determination from what I see. I mean, I'm on Twitter. I haven't been down to Coral Gables since last season. I'm going down here in a few months, and I'm very anxious to see what kind of attitude I sense from this, because I mean, I was there at fall camp. The attitude was great. I mean, intensity was high, and there seemed to be, you know, they wanted to change, but obviously that didn't work. But 2020, it has to be the year, man. I'm sorry, it has to be the year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, man. I mean, so here's my take on what you're just talking about with Tate and even, I mean, a lump Dan Enos in there is, I mean, we were getting hyped on, and let me preface this by saying that I don't mean any disrespect to Tate because, you know, I'm hopeful
that.
That's what you say. No, I promise, man. I love Tate. I really do. I love Tate. Like, I've been on the Tate train all year last year. I hope he sticks around. I hope we get to see him as the starter at some point. Probably not this year, but, you know, you never know. Like we were getting all hyped over Tate, who we were hyped off of reputation, right? Because like you said, he hadn't produced at a Division I level, at a college football level, at a Power Five level, and we were also getting hyped over Dan Enos, who was coming off of a season where he was just the QB coach.
Everyone thought he was the play caller.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, we were getting hyped over guys that maybe had done good things in the past, but it's like they were coming off seasons where, I mean, what did they really do?
We were so trigger happy to get rid of Mark Richt, John Richt, and that offense that we saw Dan Enos, you know, we saw what he did with the Alabama quarterbacks. We kind of all thought it was with the offense, and we were so blinded by this excitement, this TNM, this feeling that, oh my gosh, our coach tweets all the time. He tweets bat signals. We're going to win 10 games.
Yeah.
And I will say this, and I am including myself because I am the biggest idiot of all, but Canes fans, can we all agree? We were really, really stupid. And we kind of acted a little premature last year. And if you are not agreeing with me, then you are lying.
Yeah. But, you know, this year we're getting hyped, and yeah, it's the same thing. You know, we're getting hyped in the same way, I should say. But this time we're getting hyped over a guy who had 50 total touchdowns, and we're getting hyped over a guy who's coming off like the fifth best offense. You know, that's a little bit different than getting hyped on Tate Martell and Dan Enos. You know what I'm saying? Like,
and we know what kind of offense Lashley runs. Like, we know that we're getting the spread. Like,
yeah,
we didn't with Enos. We were like, oh wait, oh my gosh, his guys line up under center. We were lied to.
that was funny. Remember the interview where he's like, what even is the spread? Oh. Is it shotgun? Is it QB runs? We do that.
Oh my gosh. Last season.
I don't even know what the spread is, Marsh. What is it?
You know what?
You got to get Lashley on the phone and explain it to us right now, because we don't even know what it is, apparently.
Yeah. You know what? It's it's something. Something has to be done. Like, I'm at a loss of words. It's going to be a long off season. I'm kind of just getting to the point where I'm like, oh wow, like, wow, like, we still have over 200 days. I mean, we still got 2 months before spring camp, but you know, the off season. I was talking to someone about this the other day, but we were saying how the off season just moves so much slower when the previous year sucked.
Yeah.
Like, when we lost to Wisconsin 35-3 in that Pinstripe Bowl, and we get Manny Diaz, and that was I can't remember an offseason being longer than that. That was awful because of how bad 2018 was. And now we outdo ourselves. The last thing that we know, the last field that we were on, we lost 14-0 to Louisiana Tech. That's the last thing that this team is remembered for. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we get Lashley and you know, Garen Justice, we get De'Ara King, Quincy Roche, but it's like, man, we have so much to prove. We have so much to prove. I mean, expectations are high because, I mean, if Manny doesn't win 8-9 games, he's out. Like, there's no question about it.
Yeah. It's a good thing he's going to win 11 this year, though. I'm pretty pumped about that.
Oh, boy. Oh, good. Do you actually, like,
are you being serious? Like, do you actually think we'll go 11-1?
Should we go
where your mouth is.
We should go 10-2. We should. However, let me say that we have underperformed what we should be every single year that I've watched this team. So
the past 2 years, I've predicted, and almost everyone has predicted, this team to go 10-2. We have gone 13-13 in those two seasons.
Yeah.
Now we're bringing out Negative Marsh, and he's here and he's out and about, and
you know what? I'm doing it. I'm just gonna go full send on the hype train. We're going 10-2. Whatever.
Who do you have us losing?
Probably UNC, and then let's say on the road at Michigan State, and then UNC. That's who we're losing to.
That's gonna be a big home game against UNC.
Yeah,
it's coming off a bye, though, and we know that we are cursed and we can never win off a bye. So yeah, we should already cancel. We should just cancel that game.
Yeah.
Let me do. Do we have? I know that we're trying to do. By the way, listeners, we're gonna start doing shorter episodes, but we're gonna start uploading 2 episodes a week. Let me ask Jordan. Do you think we have time for one more question?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even got to our full agenda for the short episode, so I think we're good.
Okay. I wrote something today, and it was my 3 biggest goals for the Hurricanes this year, and I wanted to get your opinion, and I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot. You didn't really have time to think. What are your goals for the Hurricanes this year?
Okay. Goals would be, number one, the first thing that jumps off the page to me is we need to establish a better team culture. Like, I don't know, because I'm not plugged into the locker room, but it just feels from watching the team that our culture has been garbage for 10 years.
Yeah, 15.
You know, I mean, we talked to Brad about that 2014 team, and I don't mean any disrespect to those guys, but we were talking about they lost a close game to Florida State, and then they went on a 3-game losing streak after. Like, that just feels like it's not a super healthy culture in the locker room, you know?
And how many times has that happened since 2005? Like, you lose one. Okay, may I rant for a little? Okay, you go back to 2005. We are third in the country. It's late November. We have a home game against Georgia Tech, unranked. Okay, we lose that game, and then we go on to lose the Peach Bowl 40-3, and then I know. Then the next year, we get a little bit momentum. 2006, we're 5-2, and then we lose to Georgia Tech, we lose to Virginia, we lose to Maryland, and then 2007, we lose to NC State, we lose to Virginia, we lose to I've lived this. For the past 15 years, I know this. It's I don't know why this team, one game makes or breaks, like, it crushes them. Like 2018, coming off of Florida State, I think we're ranked 15th in the country. We're like 5-1. We lose to Virginia. We lose to Boston College. We lose to Georgia Tech. We lose to Duke at home. And the season's over, yep. You know? Because they can't get over that mentality that, oh, we lost this game. Oh, the season's over. You know, I was watching something last night on the 2015 Alabama Crimson Tide, the team that won the national championship. They lost to Ole Miss at home, I think like week 3 or week 4. Uh-huh. If that happens to Miami, season's over. Well, we finished 6-6,
yeah.
7-5. That Bama team, they have a winner's mentality. They have a championship mentality that they were able to say, you know what? One loss doesn't – we can still win the SEC West. We can still win the SEC. We can still make the college football playoff. We can still win the national championship. Like, they have a mentality that I'm so jealous of.
You mean a Tim Tebow mentality, Marsh?
I love Tim Tebow. And I
– Oh, man, you're in trouble now.
And I challenge anyone who says that, who
who calls me a fake Kane fan. I love Tim Tebow.
Oh man, I hate Tim Tebow, but I couldn't resist right there. But you know, I mean, you're right though. Like maybe I'm being a little brash. Maybe I don't want to see a bigger picture. But my knee-jerk reaction when we talk about this is just like, that's mental weakness. If you lose a game and then you're so bummed out about it that you lose four more, that's mental weakness, man. It's kind of like a loser mentality, you know? Like, pick yourself up off the ground and just, like, go to work the next day, you know? Strive to make it better. Don't dwell on it, you know?
Oh, I know, and I tell people every year, and they get mad at me, and they're like, oh, how could you do this? You're the fakest fan. I'm like, I'm not fake. I know this team better than anyone. Like, and I know that might be like, not saying that I know the players or anything. I know how this team, their brain works. Going into the year, I was like, you know what? I know we're going to lose to North Carolina. And I'm like, you know what? And I wouldn't be surprised if we struggle with Georgia Tech. Everyone's like, oh, freshman quarterback. Oh, the new offense. And I'm like, have you not watched the last 15 years? Yeah. We have losing records against both of those teams. And you just think that that mentality changes like just like that with these Hurricanes? No, it doesn't. No one listens to me. And then at the end of the year, I'm standing there like a genius, but I'm also standing there like an a-hole.
Yeah. I'm just sad at the end of the year, man.
I'm exhausted by the end of the year.
Yeah, so, okay, so number one is we need to establish culture / identity, right? We need to grow a backbone, you know what I mean? Like, Manny needs to, he needs to back up this talk that he has, you know?
He needs to be the bad guy.
Yeah. So, number two is, and, sorry, remind me of the question, was it what I want to see or what?
Three goals for the Hurricanes this year.
Okay, so this one won't happen, but I would love this one, and I might take some heat for it.
Oh, gosh.
I would love to see, like, I would love to see the fake swag stop.
Yeah.
Because there is so much fake swag in this program. You know what I mean? Like, the Insta Alphas, these friggin' touchdown rings. I don't even care about the chain anymore, man. Like, it didn't work last year. We didn't force a lot of turnovers.
Well, and like in past years, the chain had powers, man.
It yeah, didn't. But powers this year. I'm just so tired of this fake swag. Like, earn it, you know? Earn, like, do something to earn that attitude, you know? But there's just been so much entitlement that they think that, because they got a U on their helmet, that they're entitled to be a buffoon, you know? It's like, I mean, it's only cool to do stuff like that if you're going undefeated or if you're only losing one game and you're playing for the national championship.
The chain was awesome when Trajan Bandy ran back a pick six against Notre Dame. The chain was awesome when Michael Pinckney picked off DeAndre Francois against Florida State. The chain isn't so cool when we get an interception against Louisiana Tech, but we're still down 14-0 in the fourth quarter. I'm sorry.
No, you're 100% right.
Looks, and I'm fine with the chain staying. I don't want the touchdown rings back. Those were that backfired.
Yeah. But, you know, even if you like watched like vintage videos of Kane's like having some like swag and celebrating on the sideline, dancing, doing backflips, you know, running into the tunnel. Like if I showed you that clip and I said that team went 7-6, you'd think that was so stupid. You know what I mean? You'd be like, why is that guy celebrating? You know, why is that guy running into the tunnel or doing backflips on the field? He went 7-6. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe that's just me.
Oh, I know what you mean. I know what you mean a little bit too strongly.
Because, I mean, that's only cool because those teams were incredibly dominant.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
If Joe Burrow did a backflip and then was dancing in the middle of the field after throwing his 6 touchdowns in the first half against Oklahoma, it'd be the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, Joe Burrow's not going to be doing any backflips.
But you know,
could you imagine like
Williams did it against FIU?
Ew.
You know, exactly.
Like, but it's just a mindset, man. The mindset of a champion, mindset of a winner. Tua's not going to be doing any backflips. Freaking Jalen Hurts not going to be doing any backflips. Like,
yeah.
Win the game, and, you know, I guess people say Miami's different because of our swag, but win the
game. You got to earn the swag again, dude.
Yeah.
I don't think we can reclaim that until we earn it again.
My best friend, Braxton Berrios, once said – Swag is a lot of things, but first of all, swag is winning.
Yep. No, that's from the GOAT himself. That's 100% true.
Yeah. Okay. Wait. Did you give all 3 goals?
No, I'm only on 2.
Okay, I'll stop interrupting.
It's all good, dude. I think we're having a good time. So okay, my 3rd goal. Let's see. The first one was culture. The second one was stopping the fake swag. And the 3rd one is win 10 games. I've only seen it once that I can remember. Please win 10 games this year, Miami. That's all I want. That is my goal, is 10 games total. So that's 10-4 if you include an ACC championship game and a bowl game. All I need is 10-4.
Oh, man, I will buy you dinner at Prime 112 if we win 10 games, man. I in my lifetime as a fan, I've really seen this team win 10 games once. Like 2003, yeah. I mean, I was 8. I was a kid. Yeah. We couldn't even win 10 games the next year with guys like freaking Antrell Roll and Devin Hester and what? Okay, no. Okay, no, you're bringing out Negative Marsh.
Let me say this. Hold on. So my first Canes memory is watching the 2002 National Championship. That's when I became a fan. You know, for whatever reason, I love the color orange. I turn on the National Championship game. There's a team, you know, that has orange in their color scheme. I'm sold, right? Because I'm like, oh man, I would have been like 8 years old, something like that. My next Canes memory is asking my parents to take me to get like deep dish pizza at this restaurant and watch the Peach Bowl versus LSU.
Oh.
And I remember after, I'm stuffed with pizza, just let's see, I would have been like 11. They had a big SUV with like 3 rows of seats. And it was just me and them. I sat all the way in the very, very back row by myself and held back tears the whole way home. That's like my second most distant Canes memory. Like, that's my second memory with this team. And it's really been the same ever since. Like, that just sums up my whole experience.
You know, one of the greatest compliments I ever got the other day was, I can't remember who it was from on Twitter, but someone said, you know what, Marsh, I give you so much respect because you're a younger Canes fan. You're 25. You don't know what these good teams – you don't know what a good Canes team looks like. And yet, like, you're still this diehard guy. And you know what? That touched my heart.
Well, thank you. I'm glad someone gives a crap.
Yeah, thank you. Someone appreciates. Okay, recap your 3 goals again.
Okay, so number 1. Establish a winning football culture. Number 2, stop with the fake swag that we haven't earned. And 3, please win double digit games.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Those are my 3 goals.
All right. You ready for mine?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Number 1 goal is to beat Florida State. Yeah, I mean, I'm an old school Cane with that mentality, and Mike Rumpf once said that coming in as a Hurricane, number 1 objective is to beat the Florida State Seminoles, and I always believe that. I hate them with all my heart. I believe that the rivalry makes this program better. I believe that both teams need to wake up and get back to where they should be, because college football is better when Miami and FSU are good and when it's a good rivalry, man. That's what I grew up with.
Yep.
But no, yeah, beat Florida State, make it 4 in a row. November 7th, they're coming to Hard Rock, 285 days away. So yeah, beat Florida State, number one goal always. Second goal, win the Coastal. And I know some people are going to be like, oh, what are you like? What? Like win the Coastal? Like, what about UNC? And I'm like, before Derek King came, okay, yeah. I mean, you could give me the UNC thing, but we got him at home. We got King, man. We got Brevin. We got Rousseau. We got Roche. Yep. I mean, there's no reason that we can't win the Coastal. The only tough conference road game that I see is Virginia Tech in November. Blacksburg is a tough place to play, and I've had nightmares of that place ever since I was a child. But besides that, Virginia's not going to be really good. Georgia Tech is not going to be good. UNC, like I said, we get them at home. You know how we get up for big games, but we have to win the Coastal. If Miami wants to take the next step from mediocrity to, okay, we can play competitive football again, we are no slouch. This isn't 2018. This isn't 2019. Win the Coastal. Win the division that you were supposed to be winning for the past 15 years. Like, when we've won one Coastal title since we joined this conference, and that is despicable. It's disgusting. So win the GD Con, win the Coastal. Let's go to Charlotte. Let's lose the Clemson by 40, but you know what? We win the Coastal. It's a step in the right direction. It's progress. And then third, you kind of already hit on it, but it's reestablish a winning culture.
Yes.
Like, and it's not just an improvement in wins, but it's an improvement in just the feeling of the program. Like, I don't want just wins. I don't want just 9 to 10 wins this year. I want positivity coming from Coral Gables. I don't want the reports to be Miami loses to FIU, Duke, Louisiana Tech. Oh, Miami has a party culture. Oh, Miami quarterbacks, players, star players are skipping practice or skipping curfew and partying the night before games. That shouldn't be what this program is about. People like Michael Irvin, people like Ray Lewis, Warren Sapp, they work too damn hard for this. Yeah. Like, there's people before. I mean, hold up the standard, man. Like we were talking about earlier, like, earn the U. And it's not just winning games, but it's creating a culture that can be passed down from year to year, man. Like, honestly, and that's
sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, like, that's my thoughts, man. Like, I have so much else to say, but I'm gonna save it for our second episode this week.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, going along with what you said, like, oh yeah, so the Barry Jackson report about, you know, having a drug problem in the QB room and you know, guys skipping practice and skipping meetings and breaking curfew, like, that stuff bothers me way more than losing to FIU.
Yeah.
Just because, like, losing to FIU is a symptom of the problem, and the problem is that report, you know, the culture issues. That's the real problem. The symptoms are losing to FIU and Georgia Tech and, you know, barely beating Central Michigan. Does that make sense what I'm trying to say? Like,
yeah. Oh no.
That's my biggest concern, because that's the stuff that spills over the next season, you know, because if you have
seasons to come.
Yeah. If you have a group of five dudes that are breaking curfew and, you know, even if two or three of them transfer out, well, guess what? Next season, you're going to have two guys that are used to breaking curfew and they're going to influence young guys.
Have you ever seen Wolf of Wall Street?
No, I haven't, honestly.
Okay, well, those who listening can understand when Jordan Belfort is talking about his dad, and he describes him as a guy who can be so calm 1 second and then flip. Yeah. That is me right now. That is me with this with this team. Like, yeah. We had a great interview with Brad Kaya, and you know, we're so joyful, and I've been positive this past week, and then we got off on a tangent. We went dark, Jordan.
I brought out the worst in you.
Jordan, I'm a ticking time bomb with anger about this team, man. I've had enough.
I feel you.
Can we just kick off already, man?
Yeah, no, I feel you.
And then the thing is, like, we're going to still be recording this, like, in June and say, oh, my gosh, can we kick off already? It's still January.
Yep.
Oh, I hate
that. All right, I got one last question for you. I'm really curious. I know we're pushing the time limit, and we're going to do another episode this week. But, I mean, I feel like we got a good flow. You know, we're going to have plenty to talk about next time. Before we end, let's hear your top three most hated rivals in order.
Florida State.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I know that the old school Canes hate Notre Dame. They hate Penn State. Yeah. You know, a lot of people hate Ohio State. I don't like those people. And the Gators, obviously.
Yeah.
I hate the Gators. I hate the Gators. I don't get along with their fans, as people are well aware. But Florida State that's my first ever game was 2002 Miami FSU. I heard that tomahawk chop, and I heard that Miami version of the tomahawk chop. And do you know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm referring to?
I don't.
Okay. Well, I will have to talk after we record, but, my hatred for Florida State is, I'm a Hurricane, man, and FSU is evil. It's they're evil, and a lot of people that this was actually a really hot topic over the offseason because we were playing the Gators, and they're saying, oh, who do you hate more, UF or FSU? And a lot of people, a lot of older Canes, said UF, but
yep.
I mean, for me, like, I could go one. A lot of people are going to get mad at me for this, but if we beat Florida State, I will never consider a season like a complete disaster. Like I said earlier, beating Florida State's the number one objective when you're a Miami Hurricane. Those 7 years when we lost to them, oh my gosh. And then when we actually beat them, when Langham caught that pass, I won't even lie.
Euphoria, man.
Top five happiest moments of my life. Yeah. It really was. Like,
yeah.
I hate Florida State. I really, really do. But I want them to be better, and I want us to be better, because it is a special rivalry, and you have to be from Florida to understand it. You have to be. Like,
yeah.
Gosh, I hate them.
Well, so number one for me is Florida State. Easy, no contest. You know, I was thinking about this summer when people were asking about, you know, Florida State or Florida, and then people threw Notre Dame and Penn State in there. And then you talking about Florida State earlier, that's why I was curious. But so number one is Florida State for me, easy. Number two, I don't know. I can say that two and three are definitely Florida and Virginia Tech. But I think that reflects the generation of Canes fan that I am, you know?
Yeah, I hate Va Tech. I hate them.
Yeah, because I've never even seen Miami play Penn State. You know, like, why would I hate Penn State? I've never seen them play Miami. You know, I've only seen like two or three Notre Dame games. You know what I mean? Or that's not true, because we play them every 3 years or so in the ACC. But like, there's no really memorable Notre Dame game besides the 2017 one where we kick their butt on prime time. You know, that's the only memorable game for me versus Notre Dame. So yeah, man, Virginia Tech, I freaking hate those guys.
Yeah. What's a Hokie? The hell's a Hokie?
I just, like, call them the Turkeys, dude.
Ew. Like,
one of my buddies lived in Blacksburg for a little bit, and I just,
that poor soul.
Yeah, I always text them, tell them that the Turkeys suck.
When I was a kid, it was Michael Vick, and then it was Marcus Vick, and
I remember the
Beamer Ball, man. Like, they were.
Man.
Why are you feeling right with such hate right now?
Sorry, Mark. Oh man. All right. Well, let's save everything else for next week, bro. I think we're at 1 hour and 10 minutes right now. So
it was a glorious, glorious episode. Thanks again to our man Brad Kaya, and thank you to all of you who listen. Remember to subscribe and listen and like and leave a comment and review, whatever the thing are. But it was a good show, Jordan. Let's keep it going.
I think it's our best yet. So thanks, as everyone. Always, have a good day.
Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like.